Well, we read in Genesis chapter 1, and I want to go back to that now and continue this series. In my own mind, I've been calling this series A Vision of Eden. A Vision of Eden. And I'm not just thinking about the original Eden, but I'm thinking about the future Eden, the new heavens and the new earth as well. Genesis 1, verse 28 tells us that God blessed mankind, male and female, and he said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth." We already looked at the subdue bit and the ruling and so on, but we're interested in the population. Be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth. Well, let's just catch up to where we've got to so far. We have seen God making man out of the same material that everything else is made of. He's made us of the dust. So the earth is home, and we belong here. We're physical beings in the physical world, which God has placed us in, as we saw, to rule. And ruling means responsible stewardship, like with the garden, to work it and to take care of it. And so it does involve work. Man has responsibility to work. And in that work, he has responsibility as well to establish a rhythm of work and rest. And we thought about that, the seventh day of rest as well. But there's another command here, and this is actually the first thing God says to man that's recorded in the Bible. The first thing he actually says to man, he says, "Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth." So where have we got to in filling the earth? Certainly we've come a long way since the words of Genesis 1 and 2 were written and the time that they reflect upon. In 1804, the population of the world was 1 billion human beings. In 1927, it was 2 billion. In 1974, it had doubled to 4 billion. And in 6 years' time, trends continuing as expected, the human population will have doubled again. In 2024, it will be 8 billion people. Can it continue to grow at this rate? And the answer is obvious. Of course it cannot. There isn't enough room for us, and there isn't enough room for all the land that we need to produce the food that we eat. We might feel like we've got plenty of space here in La Hache, but we know that there are plenty of places on the planet which are horribly overcrowded and unpleasant to live in. They are incredibly polluted and cramped for people. And the problems that this crowdedness, this overpopulation is creating are growing fast. We should listen to scientists. We should listen to them more. Although we always need to moderate what scientists say by moral and spiritual considerations. Nevertheless, at the end of last year, on the 1st of December, 15,000 scientists from 184 countries issued a warning to humanity. These are the brightest brains in the world. They said this. "It's time to examine, to re-examine," they said, "and change our individual behaviours, including limiting our own reproduction. Ideally to replacement level at most, and drastically diminishing our per capita consumption of fossil fuels, meat and other resources." So the scientists are telling us that our planet is at a crisis point, for all kinds of reasons. What is man's plan to deal with the crisis? And what is God's plan? Let me take you on a brief history of population growth. Stephen Hawking once wrote a book called Brief History of Time, which is kind of an ironic title, but here's a brief history of population growth. So God says in verse 28 to man, be fruitful, increase in number, and fill the earth. And obviously that means, in terms of chapter 2, verse 24, a man leaving his father and mother, being united to his wife, the two becoming one flesh. It means marriage, it means procreation, and by that means the increase of the population. Now, we can't really know what would have happened if man had continued in obedience to God, because in verse 28 God blesses man. So this blessed man who's in fellowship with God and is to multiply under the blessing of God would no doubt have very rapidly have been able to fill the earth, but it hasn't happened that way because of the alienation of man from God through sin. Man's relationship with God has moved from being one of blessing to being one of being under judgment. There are hints in the early books of Genesis, particularly in chapters 3 and 4, of a wider population, as it's quite a controversial thing, but of a wider population. So Adam and Eve obviously are there in their family, but there are hints of a wider population existing at that time. And these, again, coming back to science, there's plenty of evidence of a very widespread human population on the earth, going back a very, very long time indeed. But Adam's family is the focus of the book of Genesis, and we take them as a historic family, but they're given a special responsibility before God to obey his commandments, and particularly in the Garden of Eden, to avoid eating from the tree. God says don't eat from it. However, they disobey God, and as a result, into their experience comes alienation and a curse instead of a blessing. They're no longer a blessed people. So, among other things, their ability to fill the earth, their ability to be fruitful and increase in number, is compromised. We very quickly see things happening like Cain killing his brother Abel. And Cain is aware of that wider population. He says, whoever finds me will kill me. So there's a fear of death. This morning, and Kyle, in the children's address, asked the kids to imagine. I drew a stick man on the whiteboard, and I said, "How old is this person to live for?" And they said, 100. I said, "Okay, how are they going to die?" So we've got lots of different ways that this person could die at 100, and of course you know kids, and they came up with some exotic scenarios of the demise of the person. But the fact is, it happens. One way or another, people will die. And that completely changes the dynamic from what is originally set up here, where God says, be fruitful and increase in number, to Adam and his offspring. It makes it much more difficult to fill the earth. But this family of Adam, as they grow, become degenerate, and they become truly evil before God. Their only instinct and their only imagination of their hearts is evil from birth, God says. And so he brings an end to that population. He floods the area where they live, of Mesopotamia, so that only of Adam's offspring, only Noah and his family survive. As we read in Genesis 9, after the flood, Noah and his sons come out of the ark, and they're told the same thing as God said in chapter 1. They're told, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. But this is no longer an earth that is a blessed earth for them. This is an earth that's full of threats. People die, they face disease, childbirth is cursed, there are wars, there are disasters, there are climate problems, there's all sorts of hardship. And for thousands of years, man is going to have to battle all kinds of difficulties, so that it's going to be very difficult for him to be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. He's no longer blessed in the way that he originally was. We, however, live in a different age to that, and perhaps for the last couple of hundred years particularly, things have begun to change rapidly in terms of life expectancy and the ability of people to have children and for those children to survive. And it's the Christian church, if you look at history, that has played a huge part in making that possible. Again, people just don't consider this these days. They don't recognise where the roots are of, in our country, things like law and order, respect for life, care for the poor, education, and indeed the impetus for modern science and modern medicine. Modern medicine provides good sanitation, it provides a reliable food supply, and it allows us to alleviate many diseases and threats, which enables the population to grow and to age much more rapidly. Well, not to age more rapidly, but to grow more rapidly and for people to live longer, so the population grows. And we have filled the earth. I think that's true. I think it's true to say that we have filled the earth. Anywhere that's really habitable, there are people. However, the ethos of our world is still not good. The predominant ethos of the world is not godly. We don't behave in a godly manner. So the huge population on our planet is a problem, because we don't use our resources well, and we don't think sustainably, and we don't think about the future. And we still live with this economic illusion that we can go on growing and growing and growing, which we just can't, because there are finite resources, so you can't keep growing. And that's what those 15,000 scientists are recognising. And they continue in this way. They say, to prevent widespread misery and catastrophic biodiversity loss, humanity must practice a more environmentally sustainable alternative to business as usual. Soon, they say, it'll be too late to shift course away from our failing trajectory, and time is running out. We must recognise in our day-to-day lives and in our governing institutions that Earth, with all its life, is our only home. So these are the scientists. They know what they're talking about, because they're studying these things all the time. And they're warning our world. This is man warning the world. And I think not listening to warnings like that for us is a bit like buying a car, but not bothering to listen to the manual, or to read it, or to do anything it says in it. So you buy your car and everything goes fine, and you drive and drive and drive, but you forget or you fail to keep your tire pressures up, you fail to top up the oil in your engine, and eventually the car becomes undrivable. The car just breaks down. And we're not listening to the warnings. We're still over-consuming, we're still exploiting, we're still treating with selfish contempt the resources of this world. And if we don't wake up soon, the future for our children and our grandchildren doesn't look good. So man's going to have to do something about that. I don't know what man will do, and probably it'll be when we're absolutely forced to, that we'll do things. We're beginning to wake up to things like plastics, But we've got a lot of work to do in that, and there are lots and lots of other issues. We maybe, as I say, don't feel it so keenly here in Lachalish, but we don't need to look too far afield to see how bad things are in some parts of the world. Well, whatever man does, God has a plan. And while this population is growing, God is gathering another population. And that population is his family. It's those who are reconciled to him through Jesus Christ. He's gathering for himself a people who pray, "Your will be done on earth." He's gathering for himself a people who are the meek, who will inherit the earth. So there's another plan going on, as well as man's plan, or man's lack of a plan, and it's God's plan. And God's plan has a timetable. It's not one that's known to us, but it's there nevertheless. God the Father knows it. And he'll say one day, enough. Just like he did in the days of Noah. He'll say one day, enough. Enough of this exploitation. Enough of this unrighteousness. Enough of this disobedience. Enough of despoiling my beautiful world and plan. And Jesus Christ will return. And when he returns, he will judge everyone. That's what it tells us. He will judge everyone on the basis of our righteousness. And if we don't have righteousness because we're sinners, we will not be part of the future plan. But if we have righteousness because we have Jesus' righteousness, then the future plan is for a new heavens and a new earth. So everywhere that speaks about this, Old and New Testament, points us towards the renewal of the present creation. The renewal of this very earth that we're on. A new age on the earth, where the meek will dwell. On the earth is their inheritance. And all those who want God's will to be done on earth will see God's will being done on earth. It will be, I think, in many ways, going back to the way God originally describes things in Genesis 1 and 2, before sin comes in, before death comes in and suffering. And in this new heavens and this new earth will live the full number of all those who are God's family. Those who have called upon the name of the Lord from the beginning of human history. Those who have feared God, those who have been reconciled to God through Jesus Christ, whoever it's described at the various ages of salvation history, that's a lot of people. I don't know how many people, I have no way even to estimate how many people it is, but it's a lot of people. And they'll be living on the new earth, they'll be living on this renewed planet. Many billions of people, no doubt. But you might say to me, well, if there's all these people going to be living on earth, won't the population continue to grow and quickly it'll become completely overwhelmed and overcrowded? But then we're forgetting something. In the present age, we have birth and we have death. In the future age, there will be neither. Jesus said, Luke chapter 20, "The people of this age marry and are given in marriage. But those who are considered worthy of taking part in the age to come and in the resurrection from the dead will neither marry nor be given in marriage, and they can no longer die, for they are like the angels. They are God's children, since they are children of the resurrection. It's a different place. People don't die. People don't have married relationships, and they don't procreate as a result. It's a different condition. It's a resurrection. People are living forever. So when Jesus returns, the full number of those who are going to be on the new earth will be made up, will be complete, will be finally said. It will be, as Revelation tells us, a great multitude that no one can number, from every nation, tribe, people and language. And it may well far, far exceed the present population of this earth, I don't know. But it's possible for the earth to hold many, many more people than it does if its resources are used properly. For example, we waste a lot. We throw away a lot of our food. And we don't share it around properly. And by mismanagement of our land, we make much of it unproductive. And because of man's activities, desert is increasing across the earth. A third of the land mass of the earth is desert. But remember, God's original plan was make it a garden. And in the new heavens and new earth, I suggested a couple of weeks ago that we would be doing just that. Be working to make it a garden. And make it'll be productive. It'll be sustainable. It'll replenish. And it'll be equitable. It'll be there for everyone. And the deserts will be made, as in the picture of Isaiah, the deserts will be made to blossom like the rose. So vast uninhabitable areas will become inhabitable, and they will become fruitful. And all of this takes place in the presence of Jesus. The Lord is in it all with his people. It's an amazing prospect. It's a physical prospect. Remember, we are physical beings in a physical world that is very good, or was very good until sin entered, and it will be very good. It will be a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. And that physical place will have physical activity and will require physical resources. And we'll be the stewards of that. Just like what Genesis 1 and 2 describes. It's a thing to feed your faith on. I don't know about you, but my heart aches constantly in this world. Because it's so beautiful. And yet it's so destroyed by man. So badly looked after. And we just don't know how to do with it what we should do with it. We're terrible stewards at the moment. But think of it when we can actually do it properly and live in it harmoniously and at one with our environment. Something to feed our faith upon, something to be excited about and to look forward to. But I want to finish with a warning for all of us. Because there is a number that will dwell in that new heavens and that new earth. And we don't know how close to that number we're getting. We don't know how close to the full number we are. There are a limited number of places left. If you knew that in the community here there was some really exciting community event, some event that was just something you must be at, you would rush to get your ticket booked, you'd rush to make sure you had your seat. Well, we don't know how close it is. to this tremendously exciting future becoming a reality. And so at the moment we know that there's still room, because that's what the Gospels tell us. There is yet room. But we know that a day is coming when, again, as Jesus says, the doors will be shut. So it is her responsibility, first of all, to make sure that we book our place through faith in Jesus Christ. And also that we help others to book their places too. It's a wonderful prospect, but it's not an automatic admission. The only way to be ready for it is to be ready to greet Jesus Christ when he returns. And the only way to be ready to greet him is to be at peace with him through trusting in what he has done for us, and not through trusting in what we do. There is yet room. So jump now for your place and make sure you have it. And urgently work and pray to tell others about their need to be ready, because the time is short. It must be. The way mankind is living just now can't go on much longer. Jesus will return, and we must be ready for him.